You're listening to the Fade to Gray Network.
Check, check.
Welcome back to another episode of Open Mic. I hope you're enjoying the sweet, sweet tunes of Ransom here on your Valentine's Day. Your Ransom is a new band from my friend Tyler Wicks and his new wife, Samantha. Tell me more about the song Argentina, like the songwriting process. What story are you telling there? Where'd that come from?
Definitely. So the song, it's very much inspired by the Rolling Stones. This whole album is inspired by 60s and 70s rock and roll.
Very rock and roll.
That whole era, the era of music and just kind of like the political climate and everything that was going on in those two decades is very, very, very similar to the current political climate that we have right now and in society. So that era inspired this and like just kind of drawing parallels from here to there. But Argentina is kind of like a anomaly in the middle of it, because I was watching this Rolling Stones documentary, which I love the Stones. Keith Richards is one of my favorite guitar players, and it showed on there they have this huge following in Argentina. Like, it's a huge subculture in that country, like more than I ever thought. Like, they are basically the Beatles coming to town. Whenever they go into Argentina, like, they block the streets, people are just all up, like, they're just up in arms, right? It's insane. And I guess they were like one of the biggest bands that one of the first big bands that came to Argentina. So it just kind of left a lasting impression on that country.
It's like Justin Bieber big.
Yeah. Like, it's like even bigger, like where we have Elvis impersonators over here in Vegas, they have Mick Jagger impersonators over in Argentina. Like, it's a big subculture down there.
Awesome.
So, like, I was watching that, and the song is actually about getting older and not being able to numb the pain like you used to be able to, you know? Like, coping strategies can be this or that, but you know, the younger you are, the more unhealthy the coping strategies are for you in a lot of cases. And it's just it's about struggling with that. And so, like, comparing that and drawing that parallel to the Rolling Stones, watching that documentary, like, you know, Keith Richards quit smoking. You know, it's hard to see like he's always had that cigarette in his mouth when he's up there playing guitar, you know, never missing a lick, just cigarette hanging out of his mouth, you know, chain smoking. He never got
one. Yes, iconic. Yeah.
Yeah. So like, he had quit smoking, you know, it's just little things like that. And, yeah, that's basically what it's about. There's obviously like some little, I guess, cryptic things in the lyrics, like the second verse. It's, I keep my pain reliever underneath my side of the bed. I lay awake at night regretting all the things that I've said. I hope I never have to use it on the side of my head. And so it's very like...
Are you keeping a gun under your bed there, Tyler? Should we be worried?
That's
nothing can go under a bed.
No, we have a memory home bed, and when I was bringing it into that, when I bought it, brought it in the house, and I broke one of the legs off, so I just cut the other three off, and so now the bed is on the floor.
Awesome.
So I don't have anything under my bed. No, it's a song, but but it's, yeah, it's just this cryptic way to say, yeah, the older I get, the more I struggle with depression and stuff like that.
It's interesting how that happens, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's more life to deal with at that point. But yeah, that's, I mean, very relatable. And I think that's the biggest thing for me about your lyrics is how you're able to tell a story and reveal a part of yourself through it and also keep it extremely entertaining. And like you said, the whole album has a whole rock and roll vibe to it, but at the same time you're talking about some really serious stuff. And you're releasing this album with your new lovely wife. How long have you guys been married? Speaking of Valentine's Day.
Since October 6th.
Yep.
Nice. So not that long. How did you guys meet then? Because last time I saw Tyler, I was screaming, "Fuck you, I won't do what you tell me," on stage.
I've heard that story.
Fairly certain he was single at that point.
Yeah. So we met a long time ago. I was in high school. She was not. She's older than me a little bit. And we went to, like, her dad is the pastor of Harvest Fellowship Church. At the time, it was Rebel and Springs Church of God. Yeah. Rebel Springs Church of God, and I went to Lafayette Church of God. They were neighboring cities, and it was sister churches. And so our churches would get together and do these music things, like these little concerts or little, you know, worship services. And so we met at one of those, and like our church, we came, we played, and then their church was playing. I was like, that drummer's really cute, and I was like, definitely going to talk to her after service. And went up and talked to her, and she was with her boyfriend. I'm like, man. So yeah, like, that's literally, like, she always had a boyfriend, basically.
Yeah.
So it's her own fault y'all didn't get together earlier. I see how it is.
We married different people. We got divorced from those people.
Yeah.
And then,
wow,
still always kept a boyfriend, and then she finally didn't have one. And
yeah, I think I hit him up on Facebook after I, like, finally was single this last time. And was it, I asked, like, when you were playing music the next time, because I wanted to come see you. And then I was like, by the way, I'm, you know, getting used to the single life. And then I don't know how I worded it. You probably remember
it. It wasn't that abrupt.
So when you play it again, Tyler, and by the way, like, you know, you should ask me out.
No, I think I asked how's life, or, you know, what's new, or something like that. And she said, oh, you know, adjusting to the single life. I'm like, oh, God.
The subtext was there, though.
There you go. Nice.
So his next text was what?
I put that information in my pocket. I wasn't going to make it up. I pulled it up like 2 days later or something. I was like, hey, yeah, why don't we go see a movie or something? I can't even remember.
Yeah, we went to see Brightburn.
Yeah, we did. But yeah, but we were friends. Like, I added her on Facebook like a year before we ever started dating. And so we messaged each other and sent each other memes and stuff, even though she had a boyfriend. It was like, I got past the point of caring.
The memes. Really bad. Those memes make those panties drop, let me tell you.
I was going to make an Office reference.
Please don't.
You pulled a gym.
So, anyway, so Ransom hasn't been around very long, and neither has this new relationship. So how much of these songs are a collaboration, or how much of this was did you have written and just waiting to get married to put out an album?
There were a couple of songs that I wrote a while ago, but most of it is brand new. So the song Being Broken, I wrote with my friend, probably 6 years ago, I guess now. And that was still one of those fresh out of the divorce songs, you know.
Mad at me for being broken, but I didn't do this to myself. So just piece me back together and place me back up on my shell. Waiting there, dust collecting, layer after layer upon my soul. You pick me up just to dust me off, then you let me go. If you don't love me now, then tell me who will. There's no use in starting over, there's so many spaces to fill. And even if we try, where would we begin? I promised to myself I'd never go back there again. Once to me you were a fantasy, as pure as the beige in your lips. Then our love became a tragedy when I felt you loosen your grip. As I feel, I remember believing that you could still break my fall. But you were already walking away like you had no reason at all. If you don't love me now, then tell me who will. No use in starting over, spaces to fill. And even if we try, where would we begin? And I promised to myself I'd never go back there again.
And the song Live Free was actually, that was around the same era, probably not that long ago. It was like, it's you know, it was about my anxiety. I was at a time in my life when like my anxiety was like really bad, and I realized that I had been making all my decisions based on that. Like all of my decisions were based out of fear. You know, I'm afraid this is going to happen, so I'm going to do this. And when I come to that realization, I was like, this, I can't do this anymore. And it was like the resolution of I'm not going to let fear run my life anymore. If I'm making my decisions based on fear, then I'm not actually making my decisions. I'm letting fear decide for me. So that's what that song Live Free is about.
I don't wanna be the one.
ocean, baby. And I know I'm going down. You won't see me around no more. I might just kiss the ground. But I'm gonna live for you. I'm gonna die, yeah.
So, Samantha, you haven't written any of the songs yet?
No, I'm not much of a songwriter. He mostly writes the songs and sends them to me while I'm at work, and I'll sneak at them and think about like what I'm going to play on them when I get here. Like, yeah. I believe Argentina, he sent it to me while I was at work. I got home, we played it once, then we recorded it live, posted it, and then we went and recorded it in the studio that same day.
Yeah.
Nice. Nice.
We were going to record that night, and I was off on Fridays at the time because I was on second shift, and she was working, and so I had that song in my head, and I was writing it, and so I wrote it all day, sent it to her, and then she comes home, and like we had two songs we were planning on recording that night, and then we swapped it when we got there. We're like, we're doing this one today, like just yeah, all in one day.
Nice.
Wow, that's a. An epic, want to say, a marathon of recording.
Yeah.
So reset sessions. I'm not a musician at all, but I've been a part of a lot of different recording experiences. And to sit down and hammer that out, like especially like newly married, I'm sure that was a lot of fun. But I mean, I mean, you guys definitely like are tight together. So it sounds good.
It was a lot of fun, and we wanted it to be like a run and gun process because we wanted it to sound more raw. The recording process was a whole lot more raw back in the 60s and 70s, and mm-hmm. so we didn't want it to sound really super polished. So what we did was we would record the first guitar track and her drum track at the same time. We did no metronome, and we played it like it was live on the floor, like we were just going to play it like live. And so I played the guitar, she played the drums, and we recorded both those tracks, got them at the same time. Then after that, I would stack the other tracks on top of that. So I recorded second and third guitar tracks, then a bass track, then the vocal tracks. So like, but we wanted it to do that. That way it wasn't super polished. Cause like if it was super polished, it wouldn't sound be like, you know, authentic to that era.
Yeah. Did you guys plan on playing live?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Do you have a bass player to play with you? Then I'm assuming you're playing guitar then when you play live, or how are you going to do that?
Yeah, we're doing it as a two piece right now, and which we've been doing mostly acoustic stuff. But we've looked into maybe the possibility of throwing in a bass player, but we've got such a good dynamic, just us, mm-hmm. that it's kind of a hard decision. We don't know.
We've looked at a couple of people, and every time we find someone that originally we think, oh, that might be good, and then we kind of look more into him and we're like, I don't know. So yeah.
It's just such a, like with any band, it's such a fragile thing. Like when you have a good dynamic,
yeah,
it's really fragile. Adding a third person or adding another person into the mix could really jeopardize that. So it's a tough decision. So
yeah,
we're gonna keep seeing how it goes, and I don't know, we haven't found that somebody yet though.
I mean, there are a lot of bands out there with married people in them that are successful that I can think of off the top of my head. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Waterdeep being one of them. They used to have two married couples in their band, but I'm pretty sure that they didn't like get married and then start a band. And so that dynamic is really, I mean, I've joked about it a couple of times, but it has to be a roller coaster because you think about the dynamics of a band and how, you know, like you were saying, how fragile it can be. And then you think about, you know, marriage, especially the first year of a marriage that like me and Elizabeth have been married for 11 years now. And so it's, I would not want to go back.
No.
Put it that
way. I'm looking forward to the next 10. Do not envy you guys right now. Sorry, but no.
I mean, I'm impressed. That's for sure.
I don't, I just don't want to like say something and just destroy everything. Like that'd be like, you know, I'm not daring God or anything right now. But like, it's pretty easy, yeah, to be honest with you. We get along pretty well, and we were best friends before we ever even started dating, kind of. So it's just kind of it's honestly easy. I don't know any other way to say it. We disagree, but we respect each other enough that we're not going to beat the other one over the head with, you know, like, you're wrong Birdman. Because of this. You know what I mean?
Yeah. What'd you say? With Birdman.
With I mean, I'll guilt trip. I don't know. That's why.
that's your bag, huh? You all kinds of, like, you got receipts, you got ticket stubs from all your guilt trips. So,
well, I mean, we don't take ourselves too seriously, and we also aren't afraid to laugh at ourselves. Like, I know I'm petty sometimes, but I can laugh at myself. Like, I'm petty, and then she'll laugh, and it makes me laugh too. And we laugh, and we just move on.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
It's really.
There are a lot of what I would say, not religious overtones to your songs, but a lot of things that you can tell were written from a place of, you know, struggling with, you know, coming out of a religious system. There's no question there yet.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I don't want to get ahead.
No, you're good. You're good. I think you know where I'm going with this. But I mean, as far as, so where are you with all that? And a lot of it, you're really putting down the religious system. But I've heard you talk in other circles that you guys still play church on a Sunday morning.
Oh, yeah.
So how does that work out?
So I was fortunate enough to, I feel like I won the lottery, because I was also seeking something missing that was in my spiritual life, at church, and like, just feeling like I was going to church. I was actually the worship leader at the church I was going to, and they're great people. It was a wonderful family there. I still love them very much. Still go visit, you know. Just great people, really good friends of mine. And it just felt like there was something missing. It felt like I wasn't growing when I was there. I felt like that I wasn't learning things, and that, you know, I didn't know where it was that I was supposed to learn things, but I didn't feel like it was there. It just wasn't happening. And we started dating, and I was, you know, I was going to try her church. I'd already left my church fairly early when we started dating. And I was like, well, I'll try to go to yours and just see what happens. And first Sunday, I'm like, I don't think I can go here at all, because I didn't feel like I had the patience. Harvest Fellowship Church is truly, truly, and I know this, so many people say this, and I feel like a lot of people say what I'm saying right now. Oh, everybody says this. But it truly is a church for the rejects. It's a church for the people that nobody else wants. And I feel like a lot of churches say that, but then you go there and it's still the same people that, you know, tithe and all. It's just like, I don't know. Like, it's, I would say 90% of the church attendees are either current addicts or recovering addicts.
That's
correct.
Probably correct. Yeah.
It's fairly accurate. I feel like, there's an ADO program. And the ADO,
so you,
program,
you go to an AA meeting. You don't go to church.
Kind of is like the Sunday morning worship of an AA meeting.
Yes.
A different name.
And so the first time I went there, I'm like, I don't have the patience to go here, because nobody's watching their kids. Like, the kids are like running around, like, you know, and it's just like stressful. Like, you know, it's just like so random. And literally, I mean, it's, you know, there's been people that have went into episodes, you know, maybe, you know, DTs or anything like that. I don't really know what's going on and stuff, but there's been episodes during church and I'm like, I don't think I have the patience to go here. And like, I don't know how many days, like just a few days later, I'm like, that's why I need to go there, because I don't have the patience to go to church with these people. So I need the, you know what I mean? Like, it was like the answer literally right there staring me in the face. And, it's really cool. And the album is not necessarily, I'm not calling out the church. And I know, you know me, and you know what I'm about and everything. So what are you so afraid of? Let me just go peel it all the way back to kind of like the inspiration for the theme, if that's okay.
Yeah, that's fine, because I was going to say, and talk about fearing people as well, because I'm wondering, do you get to play that on Sunday mornings?
We probably could if they wanted us to. But so I was watching the movie A Time to Kill. I hadn't seen it in a long time. It was one of my favorite movies. I did a book report on the book when I was in junior high, you know.
Nice. And
my little brother and sister had never seen it. And I'm like, they have got to watch this movie. I found the Blu-ray at Best Buy, and so we were watching it. And there's a scene in the middle of the movie, and a character turns to another character and says, we have to do something about this, which I don't want to give spoilers for the movie. If you haven't watched the movie, you go watch it. But there's something that happens, and one character says, we need to do something about this thing that happened. And they say, what are you talking
about? I feel like we just started doing a Movies at Modem.
Right?
Hey, this is all the movies that... Anyway.
So one character turns to another character, and they say, we need to do something about this. The other character says, you know, what do you mean? Like, you know, there's the Klan ain't around anymore. And... this, by the way, this is a racial thing. The other character says, oh, they're still around. Then character two says, what do you mean, skinheads? Character one says, no, I'm talking about good God-fearing Klan. And that struck a note with me, like, big time. I'd seen that movie a lot. I read the book. And it just, it hit me that the KKK believe themselves to be good God-fearing people. They in their minds, they think they're doing the right thing. You really look at Hitler. Hitler thought he was doing the right thing. He considered himself to be a God-fearing person. There are very many pastors and leaders that consider themselves to be God-fearing people that I don't think they're doing what they need to be doing. They're actually hurting people. They're harming people. They're really driving people into the ground. There are leaders in this country that consider themselves to be God-fearing people that I believe they are.
If you just look at history, I mean, you can see that the whole God-fearing thing, you got the Crusades happened out of that. And history, if we're not careful, can repeat itself. So, yeah.
Indeed, slavery. Slave owners would use the Bible against their slaves, saying, you know, read this Bible. This is why you need to be a good slave. They used that against people to control them. And I think that goes on often in the church abroad.
Under my bed awaits the king of conspiracy. Late at night, I hear the voices on the TV. The Prince of Persuasion. He whispers in my ear the fate of the nation. Where are the prayers for human rights? Why are your kids committing suicide? Love is patient.
So you're just talking a lot about the KKK earlier. Should I be concerned about? I thought that was a ghost on the front of your album, but now I'm not so sure. So
can we still be friends?
The ghost? No.
Who's that underneath the sheet?
The ghost on the cover of the album is symbolic of the looming presence of racism that is still in our country. Everybody says it's dead. It's supposed to have died, but yet it's a ghost, but it still affects things. It's still here. Even though it's dead, or so people say, it's still here. So in that sense, it's a ghost. And it also, you know, yes, it's very reminiscent of the get up that the Klan wore, you know? So it all kind of ties in together.
Well, fearing people definitely have a lot more reason for me to fear them now.
Samantha, what's your favorite song on the album?
So my favorite song is Old Dead Witch. nice. Yeah, it's the heaviest song. I'm more like influenced by heavier rock. Led Zeppelin's like one of my favorite bands. It's very like, it's got that just kind of bluesy, heavy feel to it. And like, I really like what the meanings of the lyrics are too, but he's better at explaining them. So I can't like, you know,
what do you get out of the song though, lyrically?
So in Old Dead Witch, it's sort of representative of anything that you need to get out of your life or that has just been like weighing on you and you want to get away. Like it could be an old relationship. It could be drugs and alcohol or just anything that just will not get out of your mind and you need to get it out and kill it, and you're not going to stop until it's dead.
Yep.
You got your finger wrapped around me. The August sky is dark and cloudy. I'm just so far from where you found. Laughter is so frightening. You put your poison down inside me. I try to hide and you still find me. Now try to hide and you still find me.
I most like it because I like playing the drums.
How long have you been playing the drums, Samantha?
17 years.
Nice.
And other than church bands, how many bands have you've played in?
This will be my third non-church band. I was in a very punk rock band in my early 20s. Well, late teens, early 20s. And then later on, I was in an all-female version cover band of the Ramones.
Cool.
Of what?
The Ramones. The Ramones.
We were called the Ramones.
Very cool. That sounds like so much fun. I envy you. I want to start a band so bad, but I'm not in a place where I can do that.
It was actually, like, even though the Ramones songs are fairly simple, it was a lot harder for me to play them than I thought it would be because they're so fast. Like, one thing about the Ramones was they constantly tried to see how fast they could play their whole set live. So sometimes they would just play it as fast as possible and then just, like, throw their stuff down and leave. So it's very tiring playing their song.
That's kind of funny.
I don't miss that, actually.
I don't think I would either. I like to breathe in the music. Like, let's just rest here. Like, Phish is one of Omar's favorite bands, and he introduced the family to Phish and took us to a show in December, and it was just so relaxing. Like, 4 hours or so of just chill. Yeah. So the album is releasing. What's the release date?
It's already released. It released January 31st.
All right.
So it's out. It's up on Spotify and everything.
All right. So you can find it online. And then are you guys taking your music on a tour at all or playing live shows with just the two of you?
Yeah, definitely. We've got a gig booked in Chattanooga. That's March 14th.
Yep.
That'd be fun.
Ziggy's. So that's going to be cool. We're booking local gigs. We're looking into Cookeville and Lebanon. It'll be close by, but we're hopefully, it's not set in stone, but hopefully we got something coming in Charlotte, Omar, and Elizabeth.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah. When are you planning on trying to do that?
It'll be in the summer.
Come down and see that. Yeah.
Yeah. It'll be in the summer. So.
Fun.
Yeah. That'd be a lot of fun. Yeah, so, and if people want to check you out on social media, or actually, where should they go to buy your stuff? I mean, I don't guess people sell hard copies of anything anymore, so are you just digital at this point?
We have physical copies, and if you want a physical copy, you can totally, like, message us on Facebook, and we can make that happen. We charge, like...
Is it just Ransom, the band on Facebook, or...
Yeah, just Ransom on Facebook, I think, is the only thing you can, like, you just type that in, probably. It'll come up. On Instagram, we are at Ransom Band, one word. And we've got a Bandcamp, so you can get the digital album there on Bandcamp, ransom.bandcamp.com. We have merch, which is just like, you know, we've got shirts, coffee mugs, all that stuff on Threadless, ransom.threadless.com. But as far as like, if you want a physical copy of a CD, hit us up on Facebook and we can make that happen. They're $8 a piece. And if it, you know, depending on where it's going, might be a couple extra bucks for shipping. Digitally though, anywhere music streams and anywhere you can actually buy music digitally, we're probably there.
Yes, definitely go check these guys out. Support them. I know Tyler, I've met him a handful of times. Great guy. Sam, it's great to meet you virtually. Hopefully this summer in Charlotte, we can come down and hear you guys and hang out and buy you guys a drink or something like that.
It'll be fun.
It'll be a whole lot of fun. But seriously, thanks for coming on. And support these guys. Check them out. You guys rock.
Appreciate you, man.
Like, literally rock.
It sounded like a dad joke.
I mean, what do you expect?
Thanks for listening to Fade to Gray podcast. This episode was brought to you by our patrons. If you want to figure out how to support us, go to patreon.com/fadetograypodcast. And join the group that helps support our podcast. To stay up to date, Fade to Gray Podcast is part of the Fade to Gray Network. If you'd like to know more, find us online at fadetograypodcast.com. There you'll be able to find out about other podcasts within our network. You can also follow us on social media. We're on Facebook and Instagram at Fade to Gray Podcast and on Twitter at Fade to Gray Pod. Thanks so much for listening and have a great day. Until next time, guys, peace.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.